You're holding on Moonbase, Amr Aleph, second line. Okay, in the Mishnah, we had a bunch of machlokes in between the Shammai and the Sibyl having to do with dinim of a meal. Many of them, we're going to go through the details of them today. We started with, the first one was the machlokes about which, when it comes to Kiddush, what do you say first, the bracha on the wine or the bracha on the day, Shabbos or Yom Tov? The Shammai said first the bracha on the day, and the Sibyl said first the bracha on the wine. But the question is, I'm going to ask, are you telling me that Beis Shammai holds that the bracha that has to do with the day is the more important one? V'hatanya, we learn in a brisa, the person comes home on Motzei Shabbos, so how does he do Abdullah? He makes a bracha on the wine and then on the candle, on the light, and then on the spices. Now, in the Mishnah, we also had that order. It was a little bit differently because there we were talking about where it's after a meal, where we mentioned the light first and then the samim. Nowadays, of course, we do it differently. We're going to see soon why that is. But anyway, the point is, he says those brachas first. Then he says the bracha of Havdalah, the bracha of Hamadim and Kodesh Achol. The im ein le ela koisachod, and continues the Mishnah if he only has one cup of wine. And that cup of wine should be used for the kosher bracha after benching. So if he uses it for Havdalah and then he has his meal, he has his Malav Malka, then he's not going to have a cup of wine for that. Manichel achra mazen, then we should do is leave that cup of wine for after the meal, or mashalshal and kulam acharav, and then make all the rest of the brachas as a chain after that. So in other words, in that case, then we were saying he would be eating his meal. He would be eating his meal. Then he would be using the cup for the kosher bracha of benching and for Havdalah. Now, normally you're not supposed to do that. Normally you're not, as we learned before, you're not supposed to do Einos in mitzvahs, chavilas, chavilas. You're not supposed to do mitzvahs in bunches. So to use the same cup of wine for two purposes would be Einos in mitzvahs, chavilas, chavilas. But here we're saying there's no choice because he needs it for the kosher bracha of benching, which we're going to get into the sugya over here. We're going to get into the question. Is birkas hamazon to una kos? Is it that you have to bench over a cup of wine, or is it that it's optional?
Number one, and number two, not only chavilas, but also Abdullah comes first.
Okay, so you're talking to me because you're not supposed to eat before Abdullah. Tosfos brings up that point, which is that, first of all, Tosfos says, where do we see that you're not allowed to eat before Abdullah? We see a story in the Gemara in Pesachim where Amemar didn't have wine to make Havdalah on, and he didn't eat that night. He went to bed hungry. So one possibility, so we see, and then the next day they brought him wine and he was able to make Havdalah. So one possibility, Tosfos says, is that Amemar was just being machmir on himself. The Ikra Din, you would be allowed to eat at that point. Or another possibility, Tosfos says, that in that case, because he knew that he figured he's going to be able to get wine tomorrow, therefore he shouldn't eat tonight. But if the case been where he wasn't going to be able to have wine tomorrow night either, then he would have been allowed to eat. So it's not so simple about this not eating before Havdalah. However, again, we're going to get to the question again whether Birkas Hamazon to Una Kos, which is going to affect how we're going to understand this situation over here. But for right now, the Braisa is telling us that if you're going to be using the cup to Birkas Hamazon, then you say all the brachas after that, meaning also the bracha of Havdalah. So you see that the bracha of Havdalah does not come before the bracha of the wine. Incidentally, Tosfos brings up here an interesting point. Why is it that, now, of course, the halacha is like the silver. We know, of course, when we make Kiddush and Abdullah, we say the bracha on wine first, and then later on we say the bracha of Abdullah. So Tosfos asks an interesting question. So why don't we do the same thing when it comes to making a birkas hamazon on a cup of wine? Why don't we do the same kind of thing? We should make the bracha hagafen first, then bench, then drink the wine, the same way as like Kiddush and Abdullah. We say the bracha on wine, then we say the bracha for Kiddush or Havdalah, as the case may be, and then we drink the wine. So Tosfos' answer is because when it comes to Kiddush or Havdalah, you're not at the fact that you're saying other brachos is not considered a hetzach hadas in between. because it's all part of Kiddush or part of Havdalah. You're intending to drink the wine afterwards. Here, the very fact that you're benching means that you're not planning to drink anymore. So therefore, if you said the bracha before benching, and then you bench, then it would be kind of like self-contradictory. Therefore, you only say the bracha after benching. Anyway, getting back to the braisa, so the point is, anyway, that we see that in that case, the braisa is saying that you do the bracha of the Birkas HaMazon first, and you do the bracha of Havdalah only later. So you see, it's not a matter of that Beit Shammai holds that you put the bracha on the day, in this case, Havdalah being the bracha for the day first. So the Gemara asks, okay, behind Bahami Mai de Beit Shammai, fine, who says that braisa goes like Beit Shammai, give a Beit Shammai, and maybe it's like Beit Shammai, and then there's no issue. The answer is lois takadai. If you can't think that way, because the first part of the braisa mentioned that first you make the bracha on the light and then you make the bracha on the spices. Uman shamet leidi islei hai svara. Now between Beit Shammai and Beit Shammai, which one has that svara? That is Beit Shammai. Tanya, as we learn in a braisa. Now in our Mishnah, again in our Mishnah, we had Beit Shammai and Beit Shammai both agreed that the order is first the candle, then the besamim, then the bracha of Havdalah. They just argued about when you're sticking in Birkas HaMazon over there, because again, you only have one cup of wine. Do you do Birkas HaMazon after the Ner or after the Besamim? But they both agreed that the Ner comes before the Besamim. But the Braisa says, Amar Rav Yehuda, Le'nechluku b'shamay b'silol ala mazon shebetchilav ala avdala shebetzayit. Rav Yehuda has a different version of the Machloikas. He says b'shamay and b'silol both agree, in that case, you first do the bracha on the food, on Birkas HaMazon, and you do the bracha of Havdalah at the end. The only machlokas is about what's the respective order of the candle and the spices. Beit Shammai says first the bracha on the candle, then the bracha on the spices. And Beit Shammai says the samim and then the candle. So we see from that braisa that Rabbi Yehuda is telling us so therefore, if a braisa mentioned the morer and then the summon, then obviously it must be and the braisa had said that you put that you do have dollar at the end, and we said also the braisa had said that if you're going to be combining and using the same cup for Birkas HaMazon and Havdalah, then we said you do La'acha HaMazon or Mashalshal and Kol HaMa'afra. We said you do Mazon and then all the other ones in a chain after it. That would be like Rabbi Yehuda's version of Beit Shammai. So we see that braisa is like Beit Shammai. And if we see that Beit Shammai puts the bracha of Havdalah at the end, then that shows they don't say that you put the bracha having to do with the day first, because in that case, they're telling you to put it last. Okay, the Gemara asks, Umimai de Beit Shammai hi ba'al libra de Rabbi Yehuda. Fine, but still, who says the previous braisa that we quoted is like Beit Shammai according to Rabbi Yehuda's version? Duma Beit Hilali ba'al libra de Rabbi Yehuda. Maybe it's according to Rav Meir's version of Beit Hillel. Again, Rav Meir is a Tana of our Mishnah, Stam Mishnah Rav Meir, and he says that Beit Hillel would say that you say Ner of Samim Mazim v'Havdalah. So according to him, you're putting Ner and Besamim first, and you're putting Havdalah at the end. So therefore, maybe this Braisa that we quoted on Mishnah Sabesim, Masar Shabbos, is according to Rav Meir's version of Beit Hillel. The answer is Loisaka Daidach. You can't think that way. Because in our Mishnah we're saying Beit Shammai Neru Mazin of Samim v'Havdalah. So according to Beit Shammai, Mazin goes second in the list. Or Beit Shammai Neru Samim Mazin v'Havdalah. According to Beit Shammai, Mazin goes third in the list. But the Braisa puts Mazin earlier. The Braisa says in Einrei Ela Koyse Echad, if you only have one cup of wine, Manichoy La'achar Mazin, and you leave it until after the meal, and then you bench, and then you do all the other ones, Mashalshal and Kol and La'achar, and then you make all the other ones in a chain after it. So therefore, that can't be like the Hillel of our Mishnah, because according to the Hillel of our Mishnah, first you would be making the brachas on Ner and the Samim, and only then Mazin and then Havdalah. So that Braisa can't be like that. So therefore, Shmami no de Beit Shammai. Therefore, obviously, the braisa that we quoted before must be like Beit Shammai, Ba'al Libra de Rabbi Yehuda, namely Rabbi Yehuda's version of Beit Shammai, that Beit Shammai agrees that Mazon comes first and Havdalah comes last, and the only machlokas between them and Beit Hillel is what's the order between Ner and Besam. Yeah. Okay, so that's it. So therefore, so we've proved that braisa that we quoted before, Nichnas Lebeisa, Masar Shabbos, is according to Beit Shammai, according to Rabbi Yehuda's version of Beit Shammai. So now the question is, at least according to that version, we see that Beit Shammai does not care to put the bracha that has to do with the day first, because in fact they're putting it last. So what are you telling me? We had before in the discussion between Beit Shammai and Beit Shammai that they said, why are we putting the bracha on the day first? because they said, because the only because of the day are you having wine, and also because the day of Shabbos or Yom Tov started first, and now comes Kiddush, then the same thing should apply to Abdullah. Why do you have a cup of wine over there? Why are you using the cup of wine at this point? Because you have to make Abdullah. So according to their logic, Abdullah should be coming first. The bracha of Abdullah. Well, that's the question. Yeah. So when we call Makom Kasha, so the bottom line is we're left with a kasha. Why does the Shammai say in their discussion before related to our Mishnah that they want you to, when it comes to Kiddush, that they want you to make the bracha of Kiddush first and the bracha of Agafen afterwards? And over here they're saying they want you to make the bracha of Havdalah at the end.
Maybe so the Shammai, Kiddush and Havdalah, Kiddush and
Kiddush. Ah, the answer is indeed they are. Kasavri, the Shammai, Shiny, Ayuli Yoimah, Me'apuki Yoimah. The answer is the Shammai holds there's a difference between bringing in the day of Shabbos or Yom Tov versus escorting the day out. Ayuli Yoimah, when it comes to coming in, when it comes to bring, Ayuli means bringing in. When it comes to bringing in, the word Ayol in Aramaic means to bring in. All I or whatever, that's all that shodesh means to come in. When it comes to bringing in the day of Shabbos or Yom Tov, is different than escorting it out. Ayuli Yom, when it comes to bringing in the day, Kama Demakamin in Le'odif, the earlier we bring it in, the better. So therefore, we should be saying the bracha of Kiddush before the bracha on the wine. Apuki Yom, when it comes to escorting the day out, when it comes to saying the bracha of Abdullah, we want to do that as late as possible. This way it shows that we're not treating Shabbos as a burden. It's not like, good, we're over with Shabbos. So then they would want Abdullah last. If you made Abdullah first, then it would show, like, I'm out there and say, oh, good, Shabbos is over, I'm rid of it. You don't want to do that, therefore we put it at the end.
Okay.
Well, we do put Abdullah at the end.
We do put Abdullah
at the end. As far as Nair and Besamin, we have Rabbi Yehuda's version of Rishul, and the Gemara is going to tell us on other days that is the halacha, but we'll get to that later. So that explains it. It's not that Bishamai always says the bracha on the day comes first. They only say that when it comes to Kiddush, but not when it comes to Abdullah.
If I'm bringing there, that was the same also, right? If I'm bringing the Rebbe,
But that's where you have more wine available. If you have more wine available, then there's no question. Use one of them for Birkas HaMazon and you use a separate one for Abdullah.
Okay,
so it depends, actually. The truth is, when we said before, we talked about the case where the person comes home versus we said, Manichi La'akra HaMazon, so we were talking about the Tosfos discusses over here, are you allowed to eat before Abdullah? The one thing that depends on is the question of whether Birkas HaMazon to una kois. Is it in fact required of Yalofa to do Birkas HaMazon on a cup of wine? What we're going to say as we go continuing in the subject over here is there are different opinions on the subject. So if we say Birkas HaMazon to una kois and you only have the one cup of wine available, then you have to. And if that means that you have to eat before Abdullah, even though you normally wouldn't, because otherwise you won't have a cup of wine that you can use for Abdullah and for Birkas HaMazon, then you do that. If we say that Birkas HaMazon ain't a tuna kois, then you don't have a heter to eat before Havdalah in that case, because in that case, just eat afterwards, and you won't bench Birkas HaMazon over a kois. But then if you have a separate kois, obviously you do them separately. There's no question then you don't eat before Havdalah. Make Havdalah, and then afterwards use another kois for Birkas HaMazon. If you only have the one, then even then you would use it for Havdalah. And okay, so you won't have a cup for Birkas HaMazon. You also have, now another possibility is, and this is what was going on with Abrengen, is where you started eating before Shabbos is over. You started eating when it was still Mutter's Eve, before Shia, and you continued. You're continuing your Shalosh Shodas until Maariv.
And then that would bench and leave, wouldn't drink the kosher because it's very after time.
So that's the point. So that's the thing. Because you're not supposed to eat after Havdalah, so therefore, exactly, whatever would bench at that point over a kosher, not drink that kosher yet, then make Havdalah, and then drink it, right. Okay.
You're not supposed to eat directly after Havdalah.
Well, you're allowed to eat directly after Havdalah. You're not allowed to eat before Havdalah. So therefore, then I misspoke. You're allowed to eat after Havdalah. But the point is, once he benched, then he's not eating anymore. So now at that point, he has a chiyuv of Havdalah because Shabbos is already over. If he then drinks the kois of benching, then you have a problem. He's drinking the kois of benching before Havdalah. Therefore, you'd make the Kamazan on the kois of benching, but not drink it and then make Havdalah.
When he drinks the kois of Havdalah,
after that, then after that.
You don't have in mind also to do
Well, that's the thing, because Einyan is mitzvahs chavilas chavilas. You don't do two mitzvahs over the same level of wine. This is what we're talking about. It's the same thing. It's not a matter of chilo, but yeah, there was plenty of wine available, so it's not bad.
If there's wine, there's not a question.
Okay, so, but there is, obviously, there's plenty of wine there on the table. But, no, what it is if you're in that situation where you're making birchas hamazon on a kois after it got dark, after it's time for Havdalah, then you don't drink the, you make birchas hamazon, but you don't drink the kois. You do the bracha on the cup of wine, but you don't drink. Well, you drink the kois after Havdalah. In that case, then you use it, but you have no choice because otherwise you're drinking before Havdalah. So in that case, you make the bracha. Now that you mentioned it, I'm not sure if you actually make the bracha by prayer gofen. Maybe in that case you don't. I don't remember actually about that point. Maybe you don't say by prayer gofen. At that point, after benching, maybe indeed you make the bracha holding the cup of wine. You say birchas hamazon holding the cup of wine. Maybe indeed you don't make the bracha by prayer gofen at that point. Maybe you make it after Abdallah. I'm not sure about that point. But whatever it is, at that point you make Abdallah. All right. Okay. Onward. The Gemara asks, the Savri b'shamed birchas hamazon to una kois. So you're telling me, based on this whole discussion, that the Shammai holds that Birchas HaMazon requires a kois, v'atnan, v'alahem yayin l'achar HaMazon. Later on in our Mishnah, we say that during the rest of the year, if they brought them wine after the meal, now we're talking about before benching, so they didn't have wine to drink during the meal. They're only going to first now be drinking at the end of the meal before benching. Im ein shem ela oisek kois, we said if there's only that one cup available, v'shamai says you make the bracha on the wine and then you make the bracha on the food, then you bench.
So he's not doing it then.
Well, 1 second. So that's the point. My lab mevarach levei v'shasilei. Wouldn't that imply that he makes the bracha and drinks it? Therefore, in other words, now he only has the one cup. He's not going to have it available for after benching. So apparently, Beth Shammai doesn't think that that birchas hamazon requires a kris. The answer is no. We could say that Beth Shammai would say he makes the bracha and then he sets it aside until after benching, and then he drinks it. Well, that's the question. Don't we say that when you make a bracha on something, you have to taste to it? Okay, the answer is yitoyim. It's fine, so you taste a little bit of it at that point. But you don't drink the whole thing. You leave the rest of it to bench on. The problem is, but we have a concept also that if you taste from the wine that's in the cup, then it makes it pogum, and now you're not supposed to use it for kosher bracha or for kiddush or havdalah or whatever. Pogrom literally means that it's flawed. Stained, flawed, whatever you want to call it. It means that there's a pogrom in it because now you drank from it. Now it's like shiure kosis. Now it's like the leftover that's in the cup, and it's not respectful, therefore, to use it for kiddush or havdalah or whatever. So over here, we're not talking kiddush or havdalah. We're talking about for benching, but still. So same idea, right?
So he doesn't know, nobody
disagrees with that. So the answer is, okay, the toim may be yodei. The answer is, he doesn't actually drink it out of the cup. He pours a little bit of it into his hand, and he drinks from that, and then he still has the rest. So this way, he was yodei to the bracha. This way, he hadn't made the bracha, but it's not pogum because he didn't drink from the cup. The problem is, but we say that a kosher bracha has a minimum amount. It has to be a revius. So if you drank some of it, then you don't have a revius left. So in this case, then, once you drink a little bit of it, you have less than a shiur. You have less than a revius. The answer is, the nafish leitfei mishiure. Okay, we're talking about the cup was a little bit larger than a revius, so you have a little bit extra available.
So then there wouldn't be any kadam,
and you drank after you made the bracha.
Yes.
What do you mean, though? The Bryce said that, or actually the Mishnah had said, if there's only that cup, implying he only has the one revius of wine. So what do you mean, that he can drink some of it and he's still going to have less than enough to use for kosher bracha after benching? If he drinks some of it and he only has the one revius, then he doesn't. The answer is, okay, they could say, you could say what it means is he has between one and two revius of wine. He doesn't have two full revius. If he did, then he would drink one now, and he would drink another one after benching. Like this, he has more than one and less than two. So it's enough for him to be able to drink a little bit extra after the meal, after he says very prayer guffin, and still have enough to be able to, and still have enough to be able to bench over later. Okay, the problem with that still is, V'hotoni Rav Chiya b'shama em v'vorach al yayin v'sheseyu v'achakach v'vorach v'vorach v'amazin. But Rav Chiya taught a braisa that b'shama says, you make a bracha on the wine and you drink it, and then you make v'vorach v'amazin. So therefore, so you see, it's not a matter of you're drinking a little bit of it. You're apparently drinking the whole thing. Ella, no. So you have to answer, Trey Tanoi Alibidiv Shammai. You're right. Our Mishnah's version of Rav Shammai's opinion and Rav Chiya's Bryce's version of Rav Shammai's opinion are two different opinions within Beit Shammai, two different opinions of what Beit Shammai held. Do they hold Birkas HaMazon to Unakos? In that case, then you have to leave it for after benching. In that case, you shouldn't be making a bracha on it before. Then you would have to do like we were saying. You would have, given that our Mishnah said you make a bracha on the wine and then you make a bracha on the food, then it would mean, like we said, you would have to drink a little bit of it to be yotze that you made a bracha on the wine, and then you would leave the rest of it for benching. Whereas Rav Chiya's Braisa is saying that you don't need that because according to his version, Beit Shammai would hold Birkas HaMazon does not require a kos, and therefore, there's no problem even drinking the whole thing before benching, and you don't have a kos for Birkas HaMazon, doesn't matter.
Who's the other opinion on Beit Shammai that you do?
These are the two opinions within Beit Shammai. The Beit Shammai themselves were many different chachamim, so you had different opinions within what Beit Shammai held.
So
you have our Mishnah represents one, and Rav Chiya's Braisa represents a different one. Do you need to save a revius of it for after benching? Now, the reason if we said that Birkas HaMazon to own a kos, in that case, then why are they telling you to make a bracha before benching and drink some then? So one idea is based on, we learned a few days ago that when it says the achalta v'savata v'erachta, that one possibility, we mentioned a mayor over there, says that the savata includes that you should drink. So therefore, there has to be some drink. There has to be some drinking before he benches. So it would be based on that then, that therefore he needs to be drinking something in order to properly be able to bench.
Not the full cup,
because according to the opinion represented in our Mishnah, Birkas HaMazon to Una Kos, according to Beit Shammai, and therefore he needs to save a revius for after the meal. Again, this is all when there's only the one revius. If there's two revius that are available, no problem. He drinks one before benching, and another one he uses for Kos Shabbat.
That opinion of Beit Shammai says you just need a big, not the full revius.
No, everybody agrees that for Kos Shabracha, you need a full revius. But before benching, you don't have to drink a full revius. You just have to drink enough that you made a bracha, so you taste it. Fine. Now, that's all according to Beit Shammai.
You said that two people arguing according to Beit Shammai. If they were to meet him about Shammai, they went to life's experience together with him for 10 to 15 years. They saw what he did. How could they argue what he did?
It's not that they're arguing what Shammai himself did, necessarily. First of all, Shammai himself is not even necessarily involved in this machloikas. You have sometimes machloikas in a Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel, which is machloikas where Shammai and Hillel themselves agreed on the halacha, and it's only their Talmidim argued. But besides that also, what we're saying is, eventually, so you had, there was a group of Talmidim named Beit Shammai, and they had an opinion such and such, but sometimes in later generations of Tanoim, there was an argument, what exactly did they hold? The same way as, so we have in many places in Chas. We have that. We have an example of it is in Stukka. You have a machloekas over there about a certain case in Hilchas Stukka, where Rav Yehuda says that there's a machloekas b'shamay b'shilul about how to make a certain thing a valid Stukka, and Rav Meir says there's no machloekas. They both agree that such and such. So there you have. So sometimes you have the machloekas in later generations. What exactly did the shamay hold? What exactly did the b'shilul hold?
Where did they live
at Shammai? They lived in
Eretz Yisrael. No.
They lived during the... Well, so Shammai and Hillel themselves lived while the second Mishmash was still standing. Hillel became Nasi 100 years before the Churban Bayis Sheni, and he was Nasi for 40 years. So the Talmidim are in the generations after that. Generally speaking, with Shammai, Beit Hillel does refer to that immediate generation of their Talmidim, and maybe right after that. Sometimes we have the Machlokes in Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel that lasted until a little bit after the Churban. Eventually, then they decided, as we said yesterday, that the Halacha was like Beit Hillel, and a Baskel came out and confirmed that. All right, so that's all according to Beit Shammai that was saying that Beit Shammai holds Birkas HaMazon to Una Kos, and therefore the question is, can you drink some of it before, do we say that Beit Shammai holds to Una Kos or not, and therefore that's going to affect the question whether he drinks this whole thing of wine before Birkas HaMazon or not. What about according to Beit Hillel? The Gemara is not making it clear. You actually have a machloikas rishonim, whether according to Beit Hillel, where after all the halacha is like Beit Hillel, is Birkas HaMazon to Una Kos. So you have rishonim who say that absolutely it is to Una Kos, and you would have to make an effort to get wine for Birkas HaMazon even if you don't happen to have any right now available, same way as you would have to for Kiddush, Abdullah, etc. And then you have other opinions. The poskim would say that, no, you don't have to. If you have wine available, then you should do it. And on top of that, you also have, is it technically, according to either set of poskim, it would be required, even if you're benching the Kiddush, you would technically have to make it on a cup of wine. However, in Shulchan Aruch, the Alter Rebbe mentions in Shulchan Aruch, Al Pi Kabbalah, you don't bench on a cup of wine when you're by yourself, only when you have at least a mezuman. Many people are noyig that you only make a bracha on a kosher, that you only use a kosher bracha when you have 10 people, except of course Pesach night, where the cup of birchas hamazon is one of the Dalet kosher. But in Hayom Yom, actually, it says that our minhag is that we say birchas hamazon on a cup even if there's not 10 people over there. So in practice, it means even if there's only 3 people. Lamaisi, you don't always see people do that, but that in principle, that is the. So that's because again, you have different. You have some poskim who say that it's required always. So in principle, then it, you should do on a coast, even if you have only 3. But in practice, you see many people are not so careful about that, and they do it only when they're 10.
Even if they do have the wine.
Right. So again, returning to the question of eating and drinking before Havdalah, then again, if we say that Birkas HaMazon Tu'una Kois, and he only has the one cup of wine available, then, like Tosfos is saying over here, you might have no choice. You might have to eat before Havdalah, because otherwise you have no choice. You're not going to have wine available for Birkas HaMazon and Havdalah. If we say Birkas HaMazon Eina Tu'una Kois, then you don't really have that heter to eat before Havdalah. And even when it comes to drinking the Kois Shal Bracha before Havdalah, you can't really do that, because even if you have wine available, because again, you can't drink before Havdalah. So as I said, I don't remember whether in that case you're supposed to say the Bracha Bracha Gofen at the end of benching or not. I think actually you're not supposed to, but I don't remember that for sure. Okay. And then afterwards you would yell that. We said in the Mishnah, Beshama Omer B'cholot. The next machlok that we had in the Mishnah was that Beshama had said, you wash your hands and then you pour the cup of wine. This is talking about not the wine for Kiddush necessarily. This is just talking about any time during the year when they would drink wine before the meal to stimulate their appetite. So Beshama says, first you wash, then you pour the cup. And the Silo says the other way around, first you pour the cup, then you wash your hands. So what's
wash your hands to that.
So the underlying machlokas is going to be matters of tumah v'tahara. So Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a braisa, but Shama, I mean, notably a day ma'achakach Moses in a tachlis. The reason why first you wash your hands and then you pour the cup,
the cup of wine
that he's going to drink before the meal. She'imata omer Moses in a tachlis. No, the cup of wine that you're going to drink before the meal to stimulate the appetite. Because the Shammai is saying, if you're going to pour the cup of wine first, then you have a problem. Now, at that point, his hands are still tummy. Midrabanan, a person's hands are considered sheni l'tumah until he washes them. So the problem is, there might be liquid on the outside of the cup that is going to touch his hands. The liquid is going to become tummy from his hands. And Midrabanan, you have now like this. Midaraisa, whenever you have tuma, always goes downward. You have sometimes it stays the same. Sometimes you have, for example, there's adam shenaga b'mes, the kalim, but adam whatever stays, they both stay in avatuma. But let's not get into that. But when you start going, when you have, let's say, a rishon l'tuma touches something, it's always the most it's going to become is a sheni l'tuma. It never goes up. But midrabanan though, you have a concept that liquids that are touched by something that's sheni l'truma become a rishon l'truma. So even though the source of the truma was a lower thing, was sheni l'truma, but the liquid becomes rishon l'truma. And on top of that, the Chachamim also made that those liquids that are rishon l'truma now are able to be metamei kalim. Even though on daraisa level, a vlada truma, rishon or lower, is never able to be metamei kalim, here the Chachamim said that it can be. The reason for that is because you have certain kinds of liquids that are, in fact, an avatuma d'araisa and will be metamikalim, namely the liquids that come from a zava or other people in that state of tuma. Their saliva, their urine, a few other body liquids. So therefore, those things will be an avatuma d'araisa, mayonis azav, as we learned about in Nida. So therefore, the Chachamim made a gzera that in general liquids that become tummy become a rishon l'truma and they can be metamei kalim.
They extended from the
case of that. They said generally to every with the exception of, now, they did make certain distinctions. One of them is it doesn't apply if the liquid was touched by tzvuyim, but okay, that's not really going to come up in our sugya. Another one is that the liquid is only going, as we're going to see, that if the liquid touches the outside of the keli, only the outside of the keli becomes tamei, not the inside.
So
it becomes more complicated.
What's the reason?
The reason, we just said the reason. Zera mishamashke alav. So therefore,
people
don't necessarily know. People are not going to realize the distinction between the saliva of a zav, let's say, and other liquids. So therefore, the chachamim found it necessary to make this clear. Okay. So the problem again is that if the person touches the cup with his hands not having washed until it's a dayim, then his hands are a sheni l'truma. Now, what happens is he touches the cup. If there's liquid on the outside of the cup, then the liquid is going to become a rishon l'truma. The yachs will be tamei or takois, and then the liquid in turn is going to be matame the outside of the cup. So therefore, we don't want that. So the question is, why do you need the liquid involved over there? The tamei you die in the cup. Why not just say directly his hands, which are shaking the truma, are going to be matame the cup? The reason is you're dying shniyas hand because his hands, the midirabanan, are only a sheni l'truma. And be'ein sheni or it's a shlishi b'cholin el ayidei mashkin. When it comes to cholin in general, there's no concept of a shlishi l'truma. Shlishi only applies when you have truma involved. Shlishi only applies when you have truma involved. And in order, so when it comes to cholin, which is what we're dealing with over here, his hands, which are a sheni l'truma, are not going to cause any problems unless there are liquids involved, where again, his hands are going to make the liquid rishon, and the hand and the liquid in turn will make the cup a sheni.
Shlishi
l'truma
is d'oraisa, right?
It is d'oraisa, but only by truma.
So but only by truma. Yeah. This isn't truma.
Because here we're not dealing with truma.
But one second. How do we extend it there to something that's drabana?
We're not extending it. No. The concept that there exists a shlishi l'truma exists d'oraisa, but only by truma. By cholin, it only goes as far as sheni.
Right.
What we're doing is we're saying that we can extend the sheni. We have the person's hands are sheni. The liquid that he touches becomes now a rishon, and it goes up in truma. And then the cup that it touches becomes a sheni of the truma. So we go from sheni to rishon to sheni.
Nothing to do with sheni.
Okay, so therefore, Bishamay says he has to wash his hands first. Once he washes his hands are now tahor, even on the Rabbanon level. Therefore, even if there's liquid on the outside of the cup, no problem, it's not going to be Bishamay anything. Okay. Whereas the Tillel says that you first pour the cup and then you wash your hands, because the Tillel says you have a problem the other way around. If you say you should wash your hands first, fine, your hands are clean, but the other way around, your hands now might become tamei from the liquid that's on the cup, because as we're going to see soon, the underlying machloekas is, are you allowed to use a cup which itself is a sheni l'truma? Basil holds you are allowed to. Therefore, the cup itself might well be a sheni l'truma, and therefore the liquid on it again is going to be a rishon. And therefore, so what good did it do that you wash your hands? Your hands are going to be back to being a sheni. The yachs will be tamu with their daim, zera shem yitamu mashkin should be a daim machlas akoyis. Sorry, the point is that the liquid that's on his hands, in other words, he may not dry his hands fully after he washes them. Which Tosfos points out, if you're talking about when it comes to eating bread, then he's gonna dry his hands thoroughly. You have to dry your hands thoroughly before you eat bread, because otherwise when you eat the bread, it becomes wet and it becomes disgusting, and you have a Gemara and Sota that actually tells us you're not allowed to do that. You have to be careful to dry your hands thoroughly before you eat bread. But again, here we're talking about he's drinking a cup of wine, so he doesn't care if his hands are still a little bit wet when he's holding the cup. It's not going to affect anything inside the cup anyway. So he might not dry his hands thoroughly. Therefore, his hands are still going to be wet. Now, what happens is, if the kois itself is a sheni, what happens? The liquid on his hands, the remaining water on his hands, becomes a rishon, and his hands are back to being a sheni. So what good did he do by washing?
If the kois is a sheni, his hands are...
Then the liquid on his hands becomes a rishon, and his hands themselves become a sheni, and then he's exactly back where he started. So therefore, Basil says, better let him first pour the cup of wine, and then his hands may become tamei. It's fine. He's going to wash again. He's going to wash later. The liquid on his hands might become tamei because of the kois. And then it's going to be metame his hands again. So So therefore, let him wash afterwards. Don't wash your hands yet. Wash them afterwards. Okay. So the question is, v'nitame kos v'yadayim. Why don't we say the kos itself being tame is matame his hands directly? Why do you need to invoke the fact that there's liquid involved? The answer is ain kli matame adam. The answer is that a keli that itself is a vlada tuma is not able to be matame a person. Now, Rashi points out there is actually an opinion of Rabbi Yeshua that says like
directly.
What it is is like this. We know that one of the things that's matame a person's hands, the Gemara talks about it in Shabbos, so we'll get to it in a few weeks, that's the Shem. The Gemara talks about in Shabbos that midrabbanan, one of the things that's matame a person's hands, by the way, the whole concept of hands being tame is midrabbanan itself. The whole concept that a person's hands can be tame and the rest of his body is tahor is only midrabbanan. That's what, right. But anyway, the point is, the Gemara discusses over there that sforim, sifrei Torah, chumashim, whatever, are matame a person's hands midrabbanan. Reason is because it says over there because people used to store food of truma together with kisvei kodesh, and then the problem is mice would eat the kisvei kodesh, would eat the food, and they would also damage the kisvei kodesh. So the Chachamim made a rule that kisvei kodesh, sifrei Torah and whatnot, are matame a person's hands. Rabbi Yeshua extends that to other kalim as well. Rabbi Yeshua in the Mishnah in Yodayim says the same thing applies to other kalim that are asheni l'truma, that they can directly be matame a person's hands. The Chachamim disagree with him. We're going according to the Chachamim here. Therefore, the keli itself, the cup itself, cannot be matame's hands, only if there's liquid involved. Because again, the cup is then going to be matame the liquid and make it a rishon, and then it touches his hands and they come ashamed.
Is the sifrei Torah considered a keli?
No, sifrei Torah is not keli. But in any case, because it's not keli, it's not something you use for holding something or whatever. It's not. But
it seems considered
keli. Maybe that's a chayim or whatever. The point is, Rabbi Yeshua extends that to all kinds of kelim that are ashamed of the truma, and the chachamim don't. Okay. Fine. The question is, okay, but if the cup is tame, then the liquid inside the cup, the wine inside the cup is also going to be tame, and then you're not allowed to drink it anyway. So why are we talking about keli that's tame, and you're worried it's going to be tame your hands? Worry about it being tame the wine inside the cup.
So the dry goes.
No. If the hands are dry, then that's the thing. But Hillel is saying, if his hands are dry, there's no problem. The cup is already tame. His hands, it's not going to be tame his hands because there's no liquid involved. Later on, he'll wash his hands. But the question is, if we're talking about that the cup is tame, which is what Hillel is talking about, then why are we worried about his hands and the liquid on them? We should be worried about the liquid inside the cup is tame.
Can the outside of the cup be tame and the inside be tame?
The answer is yes. We're talking about over here a cup where the outside of it became tame previously because of liquid, where the rule is the toichei torah of a gabe tame. Only the outside of the cup is tame. The inside is tame. It's none. As in fact, we learn in a Mishnah in Masech Kalim. Kli shenitmu achor v'mashkin, a keli where the outside of it became tame with liquids, which again is only achor is an outside, yeah. V'mashkin with liquids, which exists only drabanan. Achor of tmeim, the din is the outside of it is tame. Toichoi, but the inside of the keli, but oignoi, and the rim of it, Rashi explains that oignoi means like when you have on some kiddush cups and whatnot, you have the rim is sort of bent outwards.
That's oignoi.
So that. The osnoi, as well as the ear of it, which means if you have a handle on it shaped like an ear, like you have on a teacup, for example, the yodov, or if it has a straight handle, like a pan, or a pot, or whatever, all of those tahorim remain tahor, because the chachamim only made, in that case, that the outside of it is going to be tameh, because the chachamim wanted to carefully distinguish what is tameh d'araisa versus what is tameh d'rabanan. So you don't want, ultimately, when something becomes tame with a truma d'rabanan, if it was truma, you're not going to burn it as you would truma that's tameh, because it's not tame on a d'oraisa level, and therefore you're not allowed to burn it.
You'd
have to set it aside until it spoils, or until it becomes for sure tame, or it's chomet, and you burn it on Erev Pesach, whatever. Yeah. Right. So therefore, the Chachamim had to, in all these cases where they made trumas d'rabanan, they always made some kind of distinction between it and the truma d'oraisa. In this case, the distinction was between the inside and the outside of the keli. That if the outside became tame with mashkin, then only the outside becomes tame.
Except all those things, the
rim and everything are considered part of the outside, or considered part of the inside. The handle or whatever is not part of the inside, but right, when we say the outside is tummy, we mean only the body of the cup. only the outside body of the cup is tummy, but not everything else. Nitma toichai, on the other hand, if the inside of it becomes tummy, nitma kulay, then we say the whole thing is tummy, even on a zerabanan level. Because after all, you have, when liquid falls, the reason why the Chachamim made that distinction is because after all, you have, this now, all of this conversation over here is talking about things made out of other than cheres. If the keli is made out of metal or wood or what have you, this is the case we're talking about over here. If it was a kli cheres never becomes tummy from the outside anyway. So you wouldn't have the whole concept of mashkim touching it on the outside, etc. However, we know that the din is that a kli cheres becomes tummy when tumah goes into the inside of it. That's on a deraisa level. When you have a tumah deraisa, so then if it goes inside a kli cheres, even without touching its matame, therefore the Chachamim found it appropriate to make the gzera that if these mashkim or whatever it is become on the inside of the keli, then the whole keli is going to be tummy. But if it touches only the outside, then only the outside is going to be tummy. Okay, so therefore, so we see.
So for a
kli cheres, right? But so we're not talking about a kli cheres over here. We're talking about wood or metal or whatever cup. So therefore, so again, this hillel is going to hold that we don't. That stone is not makabel tumah anyway. So stoneware is not makabel tumah. So the point is, therefore, that so again, the Hillel is going to be saying, so we're not worried about the wine that's inside the cup, because only the outside of the cup is tummy, and the wine inside the cup is not affected. We're only worried about the cup, the outside of the cup being the tummy of your hands, and the only way it can do that is if there's liquid involved, and therefore, so we don't want your hands to be wet when you're touching the cup, because then your hands are going to become tummy again. Okay, but my commitment
from Sheni to Rishon to Sheni,
right. So b'may kumritzli. So what's the underlying machlokas? That Shammai Savri also leis shamish b'tzlich and nitmu achori b'mashkin. That Shammai says you're not allowed in the first place to be using a keli where the outside of it became tummy with mashkin. Gzera mishum nitzutzis, because they say there's a gzera. What happens? You might have drops of liquid from the inside of the keli might spill, might fall onto the outside of the keli. Then those mashkim are going to be metame, are going to become rishon l'trumah, and then they're going to be metame your hands. Therefore, they say that you should wash your hands first. That way, even if there's liquid falling on the outside of the cup, no problem, because your hands are already tahor. It's not going to be metame the liquid. The outside of the cup itself is also not tahor, because you're not allowed to use a cup where the outside is tahor, according to Beis Shammai, and therefore, no problem.
If you wash your hands first,
Then it doesn't matter whether your hands are wet or not. There's no problem of the keli being metame, the wetness on your hands, because Beis Shammai holds. You wouldn't be allowed in the first place to use a keli where the outside is tummy. Because they're concerned about, in the first place, that not even a question of your hands being wet. There might be some of the liquid in the cup might splash onto the outside. So therefore, the lekalim migzer shemi yitamu amashkin should be a dayim b'kois. So therefore, they say, because you're not allowed to use a keli where the outside is tummy in the first place, we don't need to make a zera that the liquid on your hand is going to become tummy through the cup. Because it can't. The cup is not tummy in the first place. The only problem is the other way around, that your hands, which are tummy, might be metame any liquid that's found on the outside of the cup. Therefore, don't do it when your hands are tummy.
Basically, he's saying from the inside to the outside,
Shammai
is not concerned about,
because the hand, because the cup itself is not allowed to be tummy. Or Basilo Sami.
You know, we say that we have a chazaka of the hands are tummy.
That's the point. That's why Shammai is saying wash your hands first. Once you wash your hands, now your hands are tahor. Now any liquid on them is not going to be able to become tummy from the cup, because the cup itself, by definition, according to Shammai, has to be tahor. Bishilo says you are allowed to use such a keli. Because they say it's not that common that some of the liquid on the inside should drip or spill. If you fill it up all the way full, yeah, but here we're not talking about kiddush. Here we're talking about the wine and drinking before the meal, let's say. Yeah, so it doesn't necessarily have to be that full. So it's not a problem that liquid from the inside is going to splash onto the outside. On the other hand, the ikalamecha shami yitamu mashkin shibidai machmas akos, and therefore you have the problem the other way around. So it's not a problem of liquid from the inside of the cup coming onto the outside of the cup, because that's not common. But you have the other way around. Your hands, when you hold the cup, may be wet, and then the tumah goes in the other direction from the cup to the liquid to your hands. Therefore, better you should be washing your hands afterwards. Your hands will remain tamei at the time. Fine, they were already tamei anyway. And afterwards, you'll wash your hands.
The Sivan says it's unlikely that splashing will come from inside,
right? So therefore,
rather it could come from the outside.
It can come from your hands themselves are wet, and therefore your hands themselves are wet, and then the cup is going to be metame because you're allowed to use a cup where the outside is tame. In other words, if Beis Hillel held you're not allowed to use a cup where the outside is tame, then we wouldn't be getting into the discussion in the first place. Because if there was a Beis Shammai is saying you're not allowed to because they're concerned about nitzotzes. So they're saying even if you wash your hands, there still is the pot. So like this, Beis Shammai is saying if we're concerned about drops falling from the outside, from the inside of the cup to the outside.
According to
Beis Shammai. If the cup itself, if the outside was tamei, then those drops would become tamei and they would be tamei your hands. But we hold, say Beis Shammai, that you're not allowed to use such a cup anyway. So there's no problem of your hands becoming tamei from the contents of the cup. The only problem is the other way around, that your hands might be tamei, that might be tamei, the liquid that could fall on the outside of the cup. Therefore, wash your hands first. Beis Hillel says the other way around. Beis Hillel says your two premises, Beis Shammai, we disagree with. We disagree that we hold you're allowed to use a cup where the outside is tamei. We're not concerned about nitzotzes. Therefore, the question is wine going to fall from the inside of the keli onto the outside and then be able to be and then be metamei your hands? No. The question is only is the liquid on your hands, the water left on your hands after you washed, going to become tamei from the outside of the cup and then be metamei your hands again? So that's what they say. Dava achar teka for Nitzilah Sidayim Suda. Another explanation, Beis Hillel says, the reason why we want you to wash later on is because you should have Nitzilah Sidayim as close as possible to the meal. Okay, so the question is, my Dava achar, why does Beis Hillel need to give another reason? Because the answer is, Hoki kamul or Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel or Beis Shammai. Because Beis Hillel says to Beis Shammai as follows. Now you guys hold Beis Shammai that you're not allowed to use a keli where the outside is tamei. The reason is because you're in mishum nitzotzes, because you're concerned about splashes that might get on the outside of the keli. Fine. That's, even if we're going to hold that's a concern, afilo hochi ho adifa, nevertheless, Beis Hillel is saying our way of doing it is better. Still better to pour the cup first and only then wash the Nitzilah Sidayim, because to take it from the Nitzilah Sidayim Suda, because you still want to have the Nitzilah Sidayim as close as possible to the Suda, to making Amotzi. So this concern of yours about Nitzilah shouldn't override that matter of take it from the Nitzilah Sidayim Suda. So that's why Beis Hillel says that even if we were going to be concerned about nitzotzes, nevertheless, there's still the fact of taking from Nitzilah Sidayim Suda, and for that reason alone, we should be trying to put Nitzilah Sidayim as close as possible to the Suda rather than doing it before. Now, there are places you will find people on the Veldt that have the minhag to wash before Kiddush on Friday night. Most people make Kiddush, then they wash, and then they make Hamotzi, which is take it from Nitzilah Sidayim Suda. There are people who do it the other way around, and the reason is posts can say, because
wash,
then make Kiddush, then Hamotzi.
Wash,
then make Kiddush, then Hamotzi, which the posts can say, the reason why that works is because unlike we're talking about over here, we're talking about moizig in a sakos, which means that you have to pour in a precise amount of water, hot water, cold water, whatever, and it's hard to get it exactly right, and therefore there's a big heftic when it comes to. Nowadays, we don't dilute our wine. It's just a matter of pouring the wine from the bottle into the cup and making Kiddush, so therefore it's not considered as big a heftic. Nevertheless, though, many of the poskim still don't like that and prefer that you wash after Kiddush, which is how most people do. Okay. Next, we said that and this matter of taking from the Nitzilah Sidayim Suda, by the way, this is weird. It comes from the fact about not talking after you wash before Hamotzi. Previously, we talked about on Daf Mem Bei about not talking between the bracha Hamotzi and eating. Where there you have on Daf Mem, we talked about where there are certain exceptions, if you have to ask for salt, if you have to whatever. But here we're talking about the other part of it, which is not talking between washing and making Hamotzi.
What is the connection? What is the connection? Washing is that and
well, you're washing for the sake of Hamotzi, so therefore there shouldn't be a hetzach hadas. Therefore, there shouldn't be a hetzach hadas talking.
So you shouldn't make Kiddush. So again,
those who make Kiddush after they wash, they have what to be soymach on. But it's not considered such a hetzach, because again, we don't have to mix our wine so precisely nowadays. However, what I'm saying is, in general, when a person washes their hands when it's Nitzilah Sidayim, they need to make Hamotzi as soon as possible afterwards. That's the take from the Nitzilah Sidayim. Okay. Next, we said Beshama.
The truth is, we're talking about that walking more than 21 steps is considered.
Not 20, well, 22 actually. Technically, yes, technically 22 amas or more is considered a heftik. However, if you have a lot of people washing, you don't really have much of a choice in the matter. But yeah. But for that, yeah, we talked about before which one washes first and which one washes last. We mentioned that, yeah, very often the leader at the table washes last in order to avoid that issue. This way, at least for him, there's a little hefsek as possible. Okay, then we said in the Mishnah, Beshamayim Makaneach B'chol. The next Macholikus was that Beshamayim says after a person wipes his hands from having washed them, he puts the towel or the napkin or whatever that he used on the table, and Basil says instead he puts it on the cushion that he's reclining on. So what's the machloek? This is, again, has to do with the halachas of Tumah V'Tahara. Ton Rabbanan, B'Shamay Emi Mekaneach Yod B'Mako Manicha Al HaShulchan. The reason why B'Shamay says that afterwards you put it on the table, She'im Ata Emi Al HaKeset, because B'Shamay says if you put the towel onto the cushion, then you have also a problem of Tumah V'Tahara. G'zeira Shem Yitamu Mashkin to B'Mako Machon HaKeset, the liquid that remains on the towel, and it has to be, Rashi says, mashka tefeach. It's talking about where the towel might be so wet, where we learned before, and then we learned before in the third paragraph, that if you were to touch something else with it, that the wetness would transfer, yeah? But tefeach amanas latia. So the towel might actually be that wet. If you put it on the cushion, then the liquid in it becomes tomei from the keset, from the cushion. The yasur v'yitamo is yadayim. And then the next time you wipe your hands with it during the meal, your hands are going to become tomei again.
It's only the pillow tummy.
Well, it's the pillow tummy, right? But in other words, because there's no problem with the pillow itself becoming tummy. There's no problem with the pillow itself being tummy. There's no problem with the pillow itself being tummy because it's not going to be able to be metame the person who's lying on it. But as we're going to see, there's machloikas between the tummy and the pillow. Are you allowed to use a table that's tummy? The same way as in the previous sogia, we had a machloikas whether you're allowed to use a cup where the outside is tummy. Similarly here, you're going to have a machlokes whether you're allowed to use a table that is tummy.
But if the cushion is tummy and you put the towel that's wet on the cushion, then...
Then the liquid in it is going to become a rishon l'truma. And then the next time you wipe your hands with it, your hands are going to be a shiny again. Right. Again, the question is, v'nitamia kesis lamapa, why are you worried about liquid? Why wouldn't you say that if the cushion itself is tame, then it's going to be metame the towel directly? And again, the answer is, ein keli metame keli. A keli that is not an abatuma is not able to be metame, that is a vladatuma is not able to be metame another keli unless there's liquid involved. So it's not metame the person, therefore there's no problem the person himself reclining on this cushion. He's not going to become tummy from it, because the cushion, we're not talking about the cushion as an avatoma. We're not talking about, let's say, that the cushion was previously used for a zov, let's say, to lie on, and then they would in fact be a rishon l'truma. Then they would in fact be an avatoma. We're talking about just they're a rishon l'truma maximum. So they're not going to be metame a person. They're not going to be metame a keli directly, only if there's liquids involved.
The towel is so wet, that's what fear.
Then that's the thing. So now the liquid in the towel is going to become a rishon, and then when the person next dries his hands, then his hands are going
to
become a shame.
It's not going to be cushion towel. It's going to be cushion.
Cushion liquid towel. Cushion, well, to be exact, yeah, cushion liquid towel and then person.
Uh-huh.
Right. Hands, right. Okay. So the question is, v'netamia kesis l'gavret gufe. Again, the question is, why don't we say if the cushion is tamei, it's going to be the person directly? Same thing, ain't clean. Metamei odom, because the keli can't be metamei the person unless there's liquid involved. Now, obviously, you're not going to have the person is not going to be reclining on the cushion, and there's going to be liquid underneath him. So therefore, we don't have that. Therefore, we don't have that concern, but we do have the concern about the liquid on the towel. So that's
the keli cannot directly
be metamei a person unless the keli was an avatoma, and here the keli is not. It's only a rishon l'truma. Basilo says instead you should put the towel on the cushion. Shem at the omer ala shulchan, because Basilo says if you put the towel on the table, then you have the problem the other way around. The liquid that's in the towel might become tummy from the table, because again, as we're going to say soon, according to Basilo, you're allowed to use a table that is a shame of the tumah. And then it's going to be metame the food. We're not even worried so much about his hands anymore. Now we're worried about that towel, if it touches any of the food on the table, is going to be metame the food.
From the table to the towel to the food.
Exactly.
The table would be what?
A shame. The table is water, whatever, yes. So it's a shame, the trauma. The liquid that's in the towel now becomes a rish in the trauma. And if it touches food, it makes it a shame.
Right. Only in the food inside the keli.
Well, no. We're not even talking about the keli. You were talking about the actual food on the table.
Yes.
Okay, so the question is, if you're worried about that, If that's the concern, then why aren't we worried about the table itself? It's going to be metame the food that's on it.
That's what we just said.
No, we said that a keli can't be metame a keli, but here we're talking about food. So why aren't we worried about it? You put the food directly on the table. You have, let's say, the challah directly on the table.
Yeah.
If the table is coming, the food's going to be coming anyway. What do we need to, what do we care about?
About
The answer is hocha b'shulchan sheni yaskin, because here we're talking about the table is a sheni b'shulchan. And as we said before, ve'ein sheni oitz shlishi b'cholin elai de mashkin. There's no such thing as a shlishi in cholin, only when it comes to truma. The only way for a sheni b'truma to be metame anything when it comes to cholin would be if there's mashkin involved. Where again, the table which is a sheni is going to make the mashkin a rishon, and then the mashkin being a rishon are now able to make the food a sheni. Okay. B'mai kamisli. So what? Yeah. What's the underlying machlokes? The Shami says you're not allowed anyway in the first place to use a table that's a shade of the truma. Gzeira mishum oichle truma, because we make a gzeira because of people who are going to eat truma. Whereby truma, you do have a shlichi on a daraisa level, and there you have a problem. If the table itself is a shani, and you put food directly on the table, then it becomes a shlichi, and it's also. So therefore, you can't use a shulchan shani in the first place. Therefore, there should be no problem putting the towel on the table, because the table can't possibly be mitame.
If it's dry.
No, it doesn't matter whether it's dry or wet. If the table is not tummy, it's not the tummy anything.
If the table is not tummy.
That's what we're talking about. Therefore, the Shammai says, better you should put the towel on the table rather than on the cushion, where the cushion might well be tummy. Because they hold the table can't be tummy. Or the silo sabi, mutile shtamish b'shochan sheni. The silo holds, you are allowed to use a table that's a sheni la truma. What about people who eat truma? Oichle truma zridin hang. People who eat truma are careful, and they're going to know not to let the food touch the table. But we're not going to be going there that nobody else should be able to use a shochan sheni because of that.
So how are they going to do it?
They'll have to put it on something else. They'll have to put it on a plate that's on the table. So that's the nafkamina. The Shammai holds that in general we don't want anybody to use a shulchan sheni, and this will hold that people who eat truma are going to know to be careful about that. Dover acher, and again, this Hillel gives another reason. Usually the expression we usually have in other places in Shas is koyanim is rizimayim. Over here, we say more generally, oichle truma zrizimayim, because it means even people who aren't kohenim themselves, even let's say, for example, it includes the women and abadim, but also it even includes the siftei chachamim, not the siftei chachamim nashi, a different sefer called siftei chachamim that's brought here on the side, says we're talking about even you have people who eat cholin al taras truma, as we learn about in cholin and other places, you have people who eat their cholin according to the standards of truma, so they're not kohenim, but nevertheless, they also are careful to their zrizimayim.
That means even on the standards of truma.
Again, the Tilo gives another reason. Another reason is because anyway, you don't have the whole concept of the Tilo Yadayim for truma does not exist in Atura. All that is only a Zeta Drabbaman. So again, my Dabra Acher, what does the Tilo mean with that? What does that mean with that Dabra Acher? What do they mean with that? What is that extra argument adding? Means Bethillel is saying to Bethshammai as follows. V'chi teimu. Now you're going to ask, we don't seem to be consistent. Why is it that we're concerned that the towel may make the food tummy, and we're not worried about the towel making his hands tummy? So in that case, why are we saying to put it on the table? Why are we saying to put the towel on the cushion? Because if you put it on the table, it might be the time of the food. Why are we not concerned about your consideration that if you put it on the cushion, then it may become tummy from the cushion and be the time of your hand? So in other words, we shouldn't allow, according to Basilo. In other words, Basilo is saying, you, Beis Shammai, might argue, if you're going to go that way, then we shouldn't be allowed to put the towel anywhere. Not on the table and not on the cushion. Not on the table because it might be the time of the food, and not on the cushion because it might be the time of your hand. The answer is, they're saying, afilo hochi ho adifa. Nevertheless, this Hillel says, if we have a choice between what might become tame, and given that we hold you're allowed to use a shulchan sheni, better to put it on the cushion, even if it makes the possibility that your hands are going to be tame, the ein tilos yadayim lacholin min atorah, because the whole concept of washing your hands does not exist on a daraisa level. The whole concept is only dabanan. Therefore, Basilo says, mutav shiitamu yadayim, better we should be in a situation where your hands conceivably could become tame. We're fine. The less lohu ikim yadaraisa. But the whole concept of hands being tummy doesn't exist daraisa. The whole concept is derabanan. The isla who ikim daraisa, rather than food becoming tummy. Where true in this particular case, the food is going to become tummy only because of geiras derabanan. But the basic concept that food can become tummy is daraisa. So therefore, and it was just a little thing, within Dirabbanan itself, we have to distinguish between something which is purely Dirabbanan, namely the tara of his hand, versus something which is partly Daraisa and partly Dirabbanan, namely Tumas Erklin.
When is it Dirabbanan, Tumas Erklin, and when is it?
Well, Daraisa, you have, if a Sheni of a Truma touches food, it becomes a Shlishi of a Truma when it comes to Truma.
And Dirabbanan?
Dirabbanan is the whole concept, for example, that, so, but the Daraisa you would have, how would it be a Sheni of a Truma? Only if a Rishon of a Truma touched it. How would it become a Rishon of a Truma? Only if an Abba Truma touched it. Because it goes downward. The whole concept that you could have conceivably that the liquid in this towel becomes a rishon and then is the tamei of the food is only derabanan. But in other words, so in this particular case, the food is tamei only derabanan because of the liquid that was in the towel. But the basic concept that food could become tamei from a rishon the truma or from a sheni the truma, when in case of truma, that exists daraisa. So therefore, Beis Hillel says we want to avoid that. We want to avoid anything. If we have a choice between avoiding something which is purely derabanan versus avoiding something where the basic concept is daraisa, because the basic concept of food can become tamei is daraisa, then better we should be avoiding the one that's purely derabanan. So therefore, better let's put the towel on the cushion, because that way the maximum that can happen is his hands are going to become tamei. Okay, so that's only derabanan. As opposed to if you put it on this table and the food becomes tamei, yes, in this particular case, the food is only becoming tamei because of the zeta derabanan, but the intrinsic idea that food becomes tamei is daraisa. So therefore, that's something we should stay further away from.
Even in this case,
even though in this particular case, it's only derabanan. Because the shani becomes a rishon, right.
Keep away from wet towels.
Right. Keep away from wet towels, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Alright, Tosfos discusses over here that maybe the Shilul Zavar Acher is not really a separate reason like before. It's more just explaining, clarifying what the Shilul is saying. Like this, usually in the Gemara, Zavar Acher means a completely different explanation. Here it's more the Shilul explaining themselves, why are you saying we shouldn't put it on the cushion or on the table, because one way or the other is going to be Tumah. The reason is, you're right, one way or the other is a possibility of Tumah, but we would rather have one than the other.
That's not saying the question, why do we need two reasons?
Right. So in other words, according to that, the Dover Akko is not really a separate reason. It's really just explaining, so why are we saying, why are we allowing there to be Tumah here in the first place at all? Okay. Next. Then we said, B'shamah and the Mechabdin. The next Macholikus in the Mishnah was that B'shamah says, first you sweep the floor, then you wash my Mechonim. And the Sibyl said the other way around. So, the reason is, because the Shammai says, if you wash my machronim first, and you have crumbs left on the table or on the floor, then you're ruining that food, because you're pouring water on it, and now it's not edible anymore. On the floor or on the table, as the case may be. Well, but that's the point. In other words, the crumbs are still edible. The crumbs doesn't necessarily mean like little tiny crumbs. It can also mean pieces of bread and things that fell on the floor.
Happy Kabbalah, don't we have to leave some crumbs when we bench?
You have to leave some bread, not crumbs per se, you have to leave bread on the table. Fine, so you leave bread at the other end of the table or something. But here we're talking about that there may be pieces of bread left on the table, some of them even the size of a kezias, and you're not allowed to pour water on them.
But you're not pouring water on the table, you're pouring water on the floor.
You're pouring water wherever it is. You're pouring the water wherever it is that the crumbs and the pieces of bread may be. Okay. Beshamai says, yes. So, Aval Batilas Yadayim La Beshamai Tchila Lois Tzvirlahu. So, Beshamai does not hold that you should wash until it's Yadayim first. My time of Mishum Pirurin. Again, because you have those crumbs and pieces of bread left over, which if you were to wash my Macharonim first, then they'd get water on them.
Well, it depends where you wash the...
That we're talking about, where you're washing, where there are
crumbs. If you wash somewhere else,
if you wash someplace else, then it wouldn't be an issue, but you wash at the table. Or with Tillel Oymim,
but... You used to wash near the table?
Yeah, we wash my machronim also at the table, no? The Sibyl says, no, there's not a problem, because im shamash tamet chachavu, if the waiter at the table is a tamet chacham, then he'll know to take away before my machronim any pieces that are the size of a kezias. He'll know to leave behind only the ones that are only the crumbs and pieces that are less than a kezias, and therefore there's no problem.
Because less than a
kezias
cannot.
Because less than a kezias, so the Gemara says this this explanation supports what Rabbi Yechanan says. The Amr Rabbi Yechanan, Perurin She'en Ben Kazayis, Mutu La'abdan Miyad. Rabbi Yechanan says that pieces of bread left in a Kazayis, you're allowed to do something, you're allowed to actively do something to waste them. So in this case, you're allowed to pour water on them. Now, on the other hand, Tosfos mentions here briefly, and in Shulchan Aruch mentions in more detail, you still shouldn't step on them. Stepping on them is kosher lana yoseh. It makes a person, it's a sgula for becoming poor. So therefore,
for those that make a kazayis?
No. We're talking about pieces less than a kazayis, so you're allowed to, for example, pour water on them, but you still shouldn't be stepping on them. You should clean them up first. Fine, but my community, so what's the underlying machlokes? This Hillel Savri also is shamish b'shamish amaret. The underlying machlokes is, if Hillel holds, you're not allowed to use a waiter who's an amaret. Of necessity, therefore, your waiter is going to be a Talmud Chacham. Now, a Talmud Chacham doesn't mean that he's learned Kol HaTorah Kula or something. It just means that he knows these relevant halachas, these halachas that are relevant to serving a meal. So he's going to know this distinction between kazayis and not kazayis. Therefore, there's no problem. He's going to pick up the kazayis pieces first, and the remaining pieces, we don't worry if he's washing my machronim over them. Or b'shamah seven, mutter le'shtamash b'shamash amaret. B'shamah holds you are allowed to use a waiter with an amaret, so he may not know the difference. He may not realize that you need to pick up pieces larger than a kazayis, and therefore, you're going to have a problem. You're going to wash my machronim, and then you're going to be damaging the pieces larger than a kazayis.
So
therefore, that's why b'shamah says you have to sweep up first in order to avoid that issue. The Rashba, by the way, has a slightly different explanation. It's not so much that the Shamash won't know what pieces to pick up or will know what pieces to pick up. The point is, once he himself washed my machronim, if he's an Amoritz, he's not going to want to bother getting his hands dirty again by picking up the pieces. As opposed to if he's a Talmud Chacham, yeah, he washed my machronim, but he's still going to understand that he has to pick them up.
So then he has to wash again?
No, not necessarily. The main reason for washing is because Melach Dermis. If he picks up pieces, there's not necessarily Melach Dermis involved. Okay.
It should be.
Not maybe not. Okay. In this whole perek, in all these machlokas in the shama b'silo, the halacha is always like b'silo. Bar meha, the halacha could be shama. Except this one, where the halacha is like the shama, you are allowed to have a shama shama oret. Therefore, you would have to be careful to sweep up first before washing my machronim. Again, that's only when you're washing my machronim over the crumbs. If you're not, then there's not really an issue. But Rav Oshia Masni Ibcha, now Rav Oshia actually learned the other way around. He had in his version of the Mishnah, he reversed the opinions of Bishamai and Bishilol, that Bishamai were the ones who say that you wash my machronim first, and Bishilol were the ones who say you sweep up first. So according to him, the halacha is also like the silo in this case, that you're allowed to use a shama shama oret, and therefore you can wash my machron.
According to him,
the silo are the ones who said that you have to sweep up first, because otherwise you may have a shama shama oret who won't know to pick up the large pieces. I thought, well, we'll stop over here, but I saw a cute verse on this that says, well, you know, when Pirkei Avos, Hillel says, Udishtamish v'taga cholof, anybody who uses the crown of Torah, like who makes use of somebody who learns Torah, cholof, he's going to go away from the world because you're not allowed to. Then he says in the next mission, Ain'ani li. If not for me, then who's going to be for me? So I saw a verse on it. Well, so that's the connection. He's saying, if we're saying that you're not allowed to use a shamash amaret, then who am I supposed to have serving? You can't use a shamash amaret. You can't use a shamash tamad chasam because it is shamash b'tagasolam. So who's supposed to help me? You may not need me. I guess I'm just going to have to serve myself.
It's a play on words.